Welcome back to Back in My Play. This is episode number 13. This week, we're going to be talking about Resident Evil that debuted on the PlayStation video game console, and then later made its way to the Windows PC on Windows 95. And then there was also an interesting port on the Sega Saturn. It had multiple iterations and even saw some re-releases and ports on the GameCube, the Nintendo DS, even an attempt on the Game Boy Color. Very interesting history with Resident Evil. But let me introduce our panel. This week, as always, I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is Trey Gibson. Trey, how you doing?
Fine.
Great. Fired up. He's got his pre-orders in. We're almost ready to go next gen. And then we also have Josh Hillier, who is already in next gen or something. Josh, what's up?
I am the master of unlocking, and I'm going to unlock your wildest dreams about the next generation of consoles.
Great. No, that was on the fly. That was a good one. Some quick news and tidbits real quick. First off, if you aren't already, please make sure that you're subscribing through iTunes, and we would really, really appreciate it if you submitted a review on there. It would mean a lot. And Josh, you have a virtual console code to give out, right? Do you still have that?
Yeah, I just need to dig it up, but I most certainly do. Yes.
Okay. And also,
wait, which one is it?
For golf.
It's for Mario Golf. Yeah, Mario Golf.
On the Game Boy Color for the 3DS. So
good game.
We're going to give that away to a submission that we're going to talk about in a little bit. Next episode, which we're actually going to record back-to-back weeks this time, we're going to be doing The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, in preparation for A Link Between Worlds that's coming out on the 3DS on November 22nd of this year. So we're pretty much going to be posting it about a week and a half before the next, you know, basically it's a sequel to A Link to the Past comes out. So it'll be cool to talk about that and get a little refresher. And, you know, really, it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that 3DS game, because I think we're all a little cautiously optimistic. Anyways.
How optimistic are you, Trey?
Very.
Okay, yeah. Sorry, I know that we're supposed to be talking about Resident Evil, though. So, but yeah, I have some love for Link to the Past right now as I'm in the middle of playing it. But yeah, Resident Evil, I'm focused.
And then, obviously, we have the holidays coming up. So we would love for you guys to start submitting your Christmas memories in the form of email or MP3 directed to kevin@backinmyplay.com. Or you can also, that's probably the best way to do it. You can use our contact form at backinmyplay.com to submit any of those memories. We'd love to kind of hear about those stories, kind of like what we've shared from our history on Christmas morning or whatever holiday that you celebrate, where you kind of wake up and you find out you have a brand new copy of Clay Fighter for the Super Nintendo under the tree, and you just can't wait to pull out the blob and blue suede goo or whatever his name was. But
yeah, but no, seriously, we want you guys to do that. That's going to make that episode really special. So please do send those. Just take a few minutes, record, send it.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, again, just make sure you're using a decent setup. Most laptops and computers have mics built in, but try to make sure that the dog's not barking in the background, because I'd like to play these back on the podcast as well. And also, this is episode 13. We're talking about Resident Evil. That's funny, right? All right. Yeah, let's take a quick break. We're going to be right back, and we're going to talk about the history of Resident Evil. So stick around. Okay, let's talk about the history of Resident Evil, which is extremely interesting because of how many different ports it got and the development history. So let's start in March 22nd, 1996, which was the release date, and it had a pretty close release across the world, obviously coming out in Japan first. It was originally conceived as a remake of Capcom's earlier horror-themed game, Sweet Home, which, you know, if you guys have checked out some retro games and things like that on the Super Famicom, it's something that, actually, I think it was the NES, the Famicom that you want to check out. Some of the early entries into the horror genre. The development for the game was directed by Shinji Mikami, who, interestingly enough, did the Super Nintendo version of Aladdin that we did not talk about last time. He took gameplay design cues from the 1992 game Alone in the Dark, which again was kind of what started this resurgence into horror games, and obviously Alone in the Dark making its way to the PC and I believe 3DO. So I don't know if we're going to hit on that. I don't know if you want to search for a 3DO and play that one, but that's an interesting series in itself. There was also some popular ports. Sega really pushed hard to get a port onto the Sega Saturn, which was serviceable, but did have its own issues. You will also notice that it came out on Microsoft Windows, on Windows 95. There was a director's cut released later where a number of alterations were made after the original Resident Evil release. Firstly, difficulty was changed to include a range mode and a beginner mode. The range mode was designed to confuse those who learned to beat the original game with knives or had unlocked the unlimited rocket launcher and had remembered enemy and item placements, more or less giving you a redone version of the game, reorganized layout and things like that. As such, items and enemies were moved to other areas of the rooms or to different parts of their maps completely. Range mode also gives the characters very different outfits, and it was also allowed you to change them back in the dressing room. The beginner mode was included with the game, in which the player's life and weapons firepower are increased and the quantities of ammunition and ink ribbons are doubled. So this is kind of a weird little sidetrack of the game itself, where I'll talk about it in a little bit, but it kind of got you confused if you like went to pick up Resident Evil after it came out, you know, maybe a year or two after it came out, and be like, which one do I get? I don't know what the difference is between all of them. And then in 1998, they also released another version of the director's cut that supported the DualShock as well. After Sony released the DualShock controller for the PlayStation, Capcom re-released the game to support that, along with a couple other games along the line. There was a really great remake that was made on the GameCube in 2002 with completely updated graphics, arguably at the time one of the best looking console games out there because of the pre-rendered backgrounds. And it also was ported to the Nintendo DS in Resident Evil Deadly Silence. And depending on the player's actions, Resident Evil itself ends with different outcomes. Resident Evil establishes many conventions seen in later games of the series, such as the control scheme that we're going to be talking about in depth, quote-unquote tank controls, the inventory system, which can also be a pain, and the typewriter-based saving process. The story revolves around members of Special Tactics and Rescue Services, or Service STARS, Alpha Team, Law Enforcement Task Force, who is trapped in a mansion populated by dangerous mutated creatures. I think you guys all know the backstory of Resident Evil and the infamous FMV that starts at the beginning of the game that is must watch and is some of the greatest FMV that ever was put onto a disc. Some key staff members, like I mentioned before, directed by Shinji Mikami. And interesting fun fact, for the DualShock version, Kenji Inafune actually helped produce that. So it's, again, one of those games that saw lots of success. So it was ported all over the place. And, you know, you can argue that this is when Capcom started really sucking its series dry of all the money that it could possibly produce. But in the end, we were left with a game that really reinvigorated the horror genre and spawned off multitude of series, including games like Dino Crisis. So it was a fantastic piece of video game history.
You know, it's also the reason that the Devil May Cry series exists.
Very true. And I mean, and it's interesting in terms of where Capcom was at the time. It really brought a lot of life back into the company too.
Yes.
The, you know, Capcom itself has really had its own up and downs throughout the past console generations, obviously doing, you know, such an amazing job in the NES and Super Nintendo days, and, you know, bringing out brand new franchises in the PS1 era was really important. So let's take a quick break. We're going to be right back, going to 1996 to 1998, depending on when you played it, to talk about a history with the game. So stick around. Okay, we're back in the late 90s, and we're going to be talking about our history with the original Resident Evil. So I'm going to toss it off to you first, Trey. When did you originally play this game, and what did you play it on?
I don't remember the year that I played it, but I didn't have a PlayStation at the time that it came out, and one of my friends did. And he, I first want to point out that I'm typically not a fan of survival horror games. I am kind of a chicken shit. So he was telling me about it at school, and he said, you got to check this out. So I went over there and he played it, and I watched, and just about every kind of jump scare that you can encounter in that game, he encountered, and it scared the piss out of me. So it wasn't something that I was kind of hyped about at the time, but, you know, it was interesting. I hadn't really seen a game like that before that kind of had that, you know, had such good atmosphere.
Do you know roughly how old you were at the time in terms of the scares and everything?
Was it 98 that it came out?
96 that it came out.
96. I want to say it was like around 97, 98. I think it was around 10 or 11.
Okay. Yeah. So still a pretty impressionable young age.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but I mean, like, I just remember thinking the setting of the game was so cool because, I mean, I hadn't really seen anything like that. You know, I'm used to playing Zelda and stuff where it's like open world, you know, you explore everything. So this all took place in the confines of a mansion. Pretty badass. It was cool, but yeah. I do remember it kind of freaking me out. Like I said, you know, not a big fan of scary games, but it was cool. It was, you know, I think the first Resident Evil that I owned was 4, but I played 1, 2, and 3 at various different people's houses. I didn't really get into the franchise until the remakes came out, and I own all of them now, and I like it a lot more than I did. So,
well, it's interesting to note that for us being at that age and 1996, I was 10 years old, but I won't get into it right now, but even when I played it in 98, I was 12 years old. So this is when, you know, with the PlayStation 1 coming out, there are many more mature games for you know, an older audience that was growing up with these systems. And that's why a lot of people gravitated towards the PlayStation 1, where, you know, they didn't want to play Mario Kart again. They didn't want to play a super colorful, you know, video game, they wanted something that was more mature, something that had a little bit more edge to it. And that was just like a crazy time of transition for I'm guessing for the three of us and a lot of people out there in general.
Yeah, well, see, the thing that kind of cracked me up, and I didn't see this when I played it at his house, but my buddy's mom was kind of crazy. Like, she didn't like him to play like violent games and everything, and I believe he got his dad to buy it for him, and his mom did not like him playing that stuff. And obviously, you know, being 10 to 12 years old, that's not really the ideal title for you to play. But, you know, some people can do it, some people can't. But anyways, he had the game, and, you know, his mom, I think, was out of town the weekend that I hung out with him and played it. But he told me at school one time that he had a Super Nintendo as well, and he had it hooked up in one input and the PlayStation on the other. And when his mom would knock on the door to see what he was doing, he would switch to the Super Nintendo, so she wouldn't see what he was playing. So I thought that was kind of funny. But
that's pretty good. It's like closing that porn window these days.
Yeah, you know. But yeah, I guess, you know, he thought she would kind of freak out if she saw him playing those games. So I thought it was kind of a funny story. But yeah, you know, for 10, 12 years old, that is a mature title. So there would be some outcry if this existed today with today's, you know, all the people complaining and stuff about violent games and whatnot.
I think The Evil Within is going to get a lot of negative press.
Yeah. You're not a kid. Oh my goodness.
So were you attracted to the game, or, you know, when you saw it, were you like, oh my God, like this is completely different from anything else that I've seen up until this point?
Yeah. Well, see, I wasn't as critical about stuff as I am now. You know, because back then, you know, 10, 12 years old, all you want to do is play the games, you know? Like, there's some things you'll point out when you're that age, but most of the time, you just want to play the games. I remember the atmosphere sticking out to me as the biggest thing. I thought it was just cool. It was something I had never seen before. But while I was watching him play, I remember, I confirmed this when I played it myself, the controls, they just didn't look like something that was very accessible. And, you know, as I come to find out, they're very... I think the word everybody uses is tank-like.
Yeah.
So the atmosphere definitely stuck out to me, and I think that's one thing that holds up even to this day, even going back and playing it, which we'll get into a little bit later. That's the number one thing that stood out to me about this game. But it looked like something I wanted to play, but at the time, you know, I was all about my Nintendo, so...
Josh, how about you? When you saw it for the first time, was it in like a magazine, or did you, you know, see it at a friend's house? What was your introduction to the game?
Sure, I was a sixth grader. I distinctly remember, and I had a PlayStation 1, and my friends had rented a PlayStation 1 for his birthday party. It was not too long after the game was released, and he rented a PlayStation 1, some sports game, and Resident Evil, and so we had like 12 or 14. We had a ton of sixth grade boys all sitting in his family's den playing Resident Evil on into the night. And when you rented a PlayStation 1 from Blockbuster, at least, they didn't give you a memory card, which is a nice thing to have if you're going to play something like Resident Evil or anything that's not essentially an arcade game. But you have to think about it. This was a time in which you either had password codes, or you save directly to cartridges, was what, you know, people were used to even in 1996. So they were coming out of that mentality. So stores didn't necessarily give you a memory card. So anyway, so we started the game over like three times. So when we turned it off, we had to completely start over. And I distinctly remember, it's just so dumb in retrospect, that we didn't realize that you had to equip the gun. But I don't know. That's just something I know to do now when I play games. But at the time, we didn't realize.
Well, normally you'd start off with a gun, you know, already equipped and all that stuff. And this was, you know, again, one of those things where they were introducing so many different new mechanics for games.
Yeah, and that's sort of an RPG kind of element, you know, like equipping the weapon that you want to use and that sort of thing. But when we were familiar with RPGs, but this didn't seem like an RPG because we always imagined them as being turn-based and, you know, in the fantasy realm and all that. So, but yeah, like you were saying, you either started with a gun in most games back then, or you walked over one and then you automatically were holding it, like in Mercs or Contra or whatever. So that was a little weird. And we were just like running from everything essentially, which really added to the fear factor. You know, it's sort of like amnesia today where you're just running away and you can't really fight. But also, we were dying a lot because of that. And that kind of stunk. So I distinctly remember being with a ton of other boys my age and the dogs crashing through the window and all of us screaming. And then I remember one random dude figured out that we had to equip the gun and everybody was cheering and celebrating and giving him high fives because we could officially fight back. And I think we made it to like the second floor of the mansion. I mean, it was a pitiful effort. Because that's the game, like type of game that's really weird to play with that many people. You know, it's such a
it almost removes some of like the things that you're getting as a benefit, like that tension. You know, it's hard to be tense when you have three other, you know, people next to you. It's the same thing when you watch like a scary movie. If you watch it alone in a dark house compared to, you know, watching it with the lights on and, you know, a couple buddies or, you know, your girlfriend there or something like that.
Right. Or 12 other buddies in my case with this, where it was just, yeah, it was very silly. But we did the dog jumping through the window scare early in the game did get us. It I think every last one of us screamed. I don't know if it's because we wanted to be goodness. Scared or what. Oof. I mean, yeah, that's and playing the game again, which we'll talk about this in a minute. Like Trey said, it was a very I don't see how that scare did anything for me back then. It's not all that catastrophic. But anyway,
no, you know what? It scared the bejesus out of me even to this day.
Really?
Well, I was playing it at night and I've had the house to myself all weekend. Like I said, dude, I'm not a big fan of scary stuff.
Fair enough. Yeah. See, yeah. And like I, my undergraduate degree and everything that I've studied film a lot and I've been involved in making some stuff. And so I don't know. I'm not easily scared by media. So, but for whatever reason, that's, I think it's just because you weren't used to games having, having jump scares, you know, like even the games that were considered to be somewhat dark and, that had occult elements or whatever, like the Castlevania games or, like Ghouls and Ghosts and stuff like that. They didn't have jump scares, you know, it was more just like the setting was sort of spooky.
Well, I think this is just like the time when, you know, again, you have so much room on these CDs where you can put data, you can put CD quality music, you can put these cutscenes, and you can tell from the get-go that they were trying to adapt some of the things that they've seen in film, in horror movies, into a video game. And that's why you mm-hmm. have those things like jump scares, you have the loading screens, like when they're walking upstairs, like slowly trying to make it more or trying to increase the tension. Same thing with opening doors and hearing like the creaking. And then also, you know, for better or worse, like you mentioned the controls, but the tension that you have when you can't straighten out your aim to shoot whether it's like a zombie or a dog or a bird or, you know, a beast that's coming after you, you know, again, all this stuff kind of led to a perfect experience that up until this point, unless you were on a PC, you probably didn't experience.
Yeah, that's a good point that they were actually able to emulate their inspiration more so than they ever had been before. So, you know, emulating those B horror movies, essentially.
When I got to check this game out, a little bit of backstory, like I think probably both, or at least for Trey, when I, you know, 1995, 96 came around, I was like, Sony who? I need a Nintendo 64. And then I ended up getting one of those for Christmas, like I mentioned in a previous episode. So I was locked into that for a couple of years. And it wasn't until 1998 where I actually met my best friend through this experience, which is, again, games bringing the people together. But like on a playground trip, you know, summer playground, we took a trip to an amusement park and we ended up sitting near each other. And I was like, yeah, I got N64. He's like, yeah, I got PlayStation 1. I'm like, oh, wait, we just like realized we live like down the street from each other. So I went over to his house and saw the world of PlayStation 1 and the amazing games that came along with that. And he was like a year and a half younger than me. So you're thinking he was probably about 10 years old, 11 years old, and I was about 12 years old at the time. And I ended up going over to his house. And this spoils a lot of my memories of Resident Evil because he didn't have Resident Evil 1. He had Resident Evil 2. And when you play that first and then you go and play Resident Evil 1, you really kind of hurt the experience just because they fixed so many issues in Resident Evil 1 in the sequel. But we'll get into that in a little bit. But anyways,
that would be hard though to go back.
Yeah. So anyways, I go over to his house and I notice, like, why do you have two PlayStation 1s? It's like, oh, that one's broken. I'm like, oh, really? Can I see if I can fix it? It's like, oh, yeah, sure. Whatever. His parents didn't care. So I took his PlayStation 1 and brought it home, tried to get it to work, you know, did whatever I could. I tried blowing on the lens, you know, literally every, you know, when you're a kid, you have lots of free time and and this is the summer. So I was trying, I did everything I possibly could to get this thing to work. And it had one of those original defects. So it did not work. And I went to my parents and said, hey, this PlayStation is broken, kind of acting like it was my PlayStation, and it has to be sent out to Sony to get fixed. So they wrote a check for $60, and we sent it via UPS, and it was the longest, like, 2 weeks I had to wait for that thing to get to the repair center in Texas and then have it come back, and literally just waiting for the mail every single day to see if it showed up. But after
that's an interesting way you got your PlayStation, by the way. Yeah, very sneaky.
And that's how I got a PlayStation 1. And then again, I had a friend down the street that had a stack of PS1 games to play, and the first thing, like I said, I borrowed was like Resident Evil 2. And then I eventually went to my local Funko Land, which is a, you know, I guess as I realize now, it's a big part of my gaming history. But going to Funko Land, traded in some N64 stuff, and saw on the wall Resident Evil in a tall box. They didn't even have them in CD cases originally. They had them in cases that looked really similar to Sega Saturn cases in terms of size, but the front was cardboard. It wasn't like plastic. It was cardboard, and it was just a really ugly case. It was, you know, surprising that they went with that design, being Sony and, you know, already having this standard of a CD case. But I guess they were also looking at old cases for Super Nintendo games, NES games, and also in Japan as well, you know, having that layout and having that boxed look. They figured that made sense.
For the whole first year of software from like 95 through 96.
And they're terrible. It's like Sega Saturn case, it just falls apart on you, and it will get, like, the front can get smushed and all that stuff. So I ended up picking that thing up. And again, I ran into the same problem. Like, I don't know, do I pick up the director's cut or do I pick up the original? I'm picking up the original because it's $5 cheaper, and, you know, brought it home. And to be honest, when I started playing it, the controls didn't bother me at all. Like, again, being a kid, I would more or less, you know, knock down any boundaries that I had to play something that I thought looked cool. And when I had my eyes open to what was available on the PlayStation and this whole new library of games that, you know, didn't look like all the Nintendo games. It wasn't like Banjo-Kazooie. It wasn't like Donkey Kong or Super Mario 64 or Mario Kart. Like, man, this is like really dark. It's edgy. It's rated M for mature, like 17 plus. You know, not since playing Duke Nukem 3D on the computer have I, you know, been so worried if my parents were going to see me playing this game. And again, I was really blown away by the cutscene in the beginning. The pre-rendered backgrounds I thought looked fantastic. And the music itself was a huge step above what was on the N64 because it was CD quality sound. So I eventually, due to the fact that I had a friend down the street that had a huge stack of games, and I remember literally weeks after that was Christmas after I got Resident Evil 1, and then I got Tony Hawk Pro Skater, which ate up the rest of my PlayStation time, and I just kind of let... The problem with Resident Evil 1 and 2, or especially with 1, if you play it for a little bit and then you walk away from it and you try to come back to it and trying to figure out, like, all right, I have this key, like, which... Or I have this emblem, where is it supposed to go? Like, where am I supposed to be going in the mansion? What am I looking for? What's the next step in the process? You're more or less going to have to start from the beginning because it's just way too confusing. The map system isn't very useful, and it's really a game of memorization. And it's a pretty big map that you have to learn, you know, much more so because it's 3D. It's a lot harder to learn that than like looking at Super Metroid or something to figure out your way around. But to be honest, like I said, I was really spoiled by just having way too many games to choose from, and I never finished that one or the second one until far later. But the only other thing that I want to quickly mention is that one, like, it was always weird with that, and like with Metal Gear Solid, with the buttons switched up, because in Japan, like, X is no and circle is yes. Like, same thing on that, those Japanese Vitas. And the it was right when I got my parents' old stereo system. So I was living literally in my parents' basement at 12 years old. And I was able to hook up a stereo, like a really nice receiver with two speakers. And I figured out how to pump the game audio into the stereo and then hook up headphones to play that game. And it was just unbelievable. It really just sucked you into it, like hooked up to a nice 27-inch Sony TV.
Nice.
So it's just it's one of those things that it was really one of those events with Resident Evil and Resident Evil 2 that really completely changed the way that I played games, and it got me completely away from Nintendo for, like, I almost missed the whole GameCube era because I'm like, yeah, I'm done with these stupid kids games. I want to go play some Resident Evil. I want to play Tony Hawk Pro Skater. I want to play Parasite Eve and Dino Crisis. Like, all these games that are just completely different than what I've played in these last, man, 12 years of my life. That's what gravitated me towards the PS1 and then eventually the Xbox and the PS2.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. It was just the perfect storm for Sony in terms of releasing games that would appeal to people of that age, you know, 13, 14, and, you know, up to like the 20s, essentially, which were the people who had been raised on video games. So they sort of, in television, it's called counter programming. If the Super Bowl's on, you do something, you program for like women or music fans or something. So that was sort of what they were doing, really pushing these more mature, violent games.
It was good marketing, and, you know, they had all those great ads when, the PlayStation was really hitting home what's that mascot who used to always have the microphone, the megaphone outside of Nintendo screaming at Nintendo? Oh, God, the stupid Crash Bandicoot. They had just such really, they had such great advertising that they're, you kind of almost realize, yeah, maybe it's not so cool, but then GoldenEye came out, and then we ended up playing GoldenEye anyways in Perfect
Dark
and
all
that stuff. So it was,
you remember,
good.
The Are You Ready thing? It was, yeah, a red E.
Exactly. Yeah. It's again, it was one of those crazy turning points, and there, here we are literally almost like 20 years later, and they're still fighting each other, and Sony just really got a great start with that PS1 going into now the PS4 and the Wii U and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's a pivotal game in my history. But to be honest, like, the big things that really stuck out to me were, one, how much I hated the inventory system.
We're going to have to talk about that then.
It drove me nuts. And it was one of those things where I'm used to being in a game where I can just hold as much stuff as I want. I didn't have to, like, organize all this ammo. I didn't have to deal with walking back to a stupid crate to, like, swap stuff out. And I know it's strategic and all that, but that really bugged me. The other thing is that, like I mentioned before, I had no problems with the controls. Like, being a kid, it was something new that I had to adapt to. So I just kind of figured it out. And it was a game that I wanted to play so much that I wanted to figure out how to play it. And it was just kind of a brute force mentality. And when you play a game like that for like an hour or two, it just, you get used to it. It's not too bad. And finally.
Yeah, you're right though. It doesn't come easy, especially considering the age that we were at that time, all three of us, it's not an easy game to play.
No. And I was so drawn to the violence in that game. I thought that was so cool to be able to shoot zombies and, like, see all that blood and stuff like that. Like, that really, that time when I started playing, luckily I had access to a PC and, like, getting into things like Quake and, just M-rated games I shouldn't be playing, but I am. I love that stuff. So it's a great game. Let's take a quick break. It's interesting. Like, we didn't really even talk about, like, the characters had no impact on me as a kid. Like, I could not care about the story. I didn't follow the story. I just really wanted to like get further, shoot more stuff, and I was so bugged, like I was pissed off when there was like zombies who wouldn't respawn and there was nothing to shoot for a while.
Well, it's one of the greatest stories ever told, though, so I'm surprised that you didn't enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I love the movies.
Yeah, they're up there with Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of movies that I love that suck, that are just stupid fun, like Mila Jovovich, her quadrilogy of Resident Evil movies is must-watch if you haven't already. All right, let's take a quick break. We're going to be right back. We're going to go to the future and talk about our revisiting of the mansion. Stick around. Okay, we're back in 2013, and we are trudging through the woods in our Stars gear to get back to the mansion and revisit Resident Evil. When you press start. All right, anyways.
What a mansion.
Yeah, you know, again, we had so many choices when we wanted to go back and play this game. Another thing is that it's just so great how many ways that you can find this game and to play it, like we talked about. A couple weeks back with... what did we play a couple weeks ago that I said that? Not Aladdin. Super Mario 64. So there was so many other systems that you could play it on. And like right now, you can go on PSN and you can download it on there. Although it is the, I guess, not so well-remembered Director's Cut, which has different music. And then also you can pick it up on the Nintendo DS, where there's a pretty decent version on there. And Trey was mentioning off the air in between breaks, I forgot to mention the re-release that they had on the Nintendo Wii as well. So you can even play it on current gen stuff with the Wii U. And that is the nice cleaned up
version. Can you imagine that game with Wii remote controls, though? The controls in the game and then add the Wii remote in there? Like, it kind of makes my head hurt just thinking about it.
Was it like a pointer, I suppose? They just use the pointer functionality?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
That sounds really weird, though.
It hurts to think about.
It does.
It really does.
But
it's wrong.
You know. Again, the only detriment I'd probably say is that it does kind of bug me that Capcom did not put out the regular original version on the PlayStation Network as well, just because you're kind of stuck with that one choice of the director's cut. But the game itself, no matter which way you play it, probably is not going to hold up too well if you go back to it now and you never touched the series, or maybe your first entry was Resident Evil 4, Resident Evil 5, or, you know, hopefully not Resident Evil 6. But Josh, how did you play it? Did you go through the Nintendo DS, or did you pull out your PS1, or, you know, maybe even, you know, boot up Windows 95 and play it on there?
Yeah, I just played it on 3DO, actually. That and the Saturn version, just back and forth.
Use your Microsoft controller to play it on Windows.
Yeah, that was a
Sidewinder.
Different level of immersion when you factor in the Sidewinder. No, actually, I played it on the Vita. I played the PS1 downloadable version on the Vita just for convenience sake. And one thing I want to say is you were talking about feeling like it doesn't hold up that well. I wonder if it's a you had to be there kind of thing. Like, I wonder if you just hand this to someone who was born like in 1996, you know, the year this game came out, essentially, who plays video games today, like how they would receive it. Not playing the remake version on GameCube or anything, but just like, here's the PS1 version. Because I still think it holds up pretty nicely, but I do have memories of playing it. So that probably blinds me a little bit. Nostalgia, you know, nostalgia goggles, as people call them. But anyway, I really enjoyed coming back to the game. I love, and this is something else, Kevin, you were talking about inventory management. For whatever reason, the inventory management in the Resident Evil series is just like, it's like this meta game to me that I really enjoy. So just like figuring out how much space, it's like playing some version of Tetris, you know? Like, I have this gun that'll fit right here. It's going to take up this many blocks, and I can probably fit an herb, and I need to put these things in my crate and strategically, you know, have it before I go to my next boss.
It's not realistic. Like, to be honest, who's going to be able to carry a rocket launcher or like a grenade launcher, a shotgun and a pistol, a couple boxes of bullets anyways? If you're going to get that nuts, might as well just let me carry as much as I want. It's the same reason why, you know, I used to, when I played like Oblivion and stuff like that, it would just bug the crap out of me. I hate inventory stuff.
I mean, I get what you're saying, because like, it's an attempt at making it somewhat more realistic, right? This is a survival horror game. You can't carry every last thing you pick up. So obviously some things have to be stored. And I get your point also that it's weird that the storage points, no matter which one you go to, the crates always have the same things. It's like cloud storage today or something, only with physical items. So that doesn't really add up either. But I don't know, for whatever reason, that meta game of managing my items really clicks with me. And I'm willing to bet that there's probably some other people who really enjoyed that, like all the way through RE4 and everything. So some other things that stood out to me, one was that point about the inventory system just being so much fun to work with. But talking about how the game doesn't hold up well, like you were saying, Kevin, the voice acting, it's worse than I remember it being. Like, it is seriously bad.
Point where it's campy enough for you, because a lot of people, like, will, when they talk about Resident Evil, like, there's multiple lines that you can easily reference, you know, when it comes to those characters, and people just, you know, understand, like, yeah, this wasn't even, like, it was bad back. I guess we didn't realize it, but I mean, it's always been terrible. Like, it was just one of those first introductions that into, you know, voice acting and stuff like that.
Right. To the point that it's almost nicer just to be able to read the text and not hear that. But that is part of the experience, you know. That's very much, like you said, sorry, my mic just fell over. That's very much a, this is the middle of the 90s, and we're learning how to do proper voice acting for a game now that we have the CD format and can, you know, include all this audio. So, you know, that's part of the experience, and I get it. But, ooh, it's jarring in terms of immersion to hear that kind of stuff. One thing I want to say is I'm really interested in the writing of video games in terms of how the story is told. And this game was one that did a pretty good job of including notes and journal entries from different people who had worked in the mansion and, you know, on the research that they were doing. So with Umbrella, and I thought
good
that was
point, man. That's something you should stop and talk about for a second, because that is like when we see BioShock today, where there's, you know, tape recorders left behind. These were the first tape recorders, or at least, you know, some of the first, I'm sure in PC gaming, people saw it as well. But you know, for us that were playing it on consoles, this is the first time where you could, you know, if you want it, here's some more backstory. If you don't want it, don't worry about it. But just keep in mind, there might be like a code or like a, you know, a lock combination that you need that's going to be in this letter. So I guess you might as well at least shuffle through it, see if there's any numbers in there.
Yeah, so they motivated you, first of all, like, if you don't care about the story, well, maybe there's going to be something you're interested in. And at the same time, they allowed players to get a little bit deeper into the setting and the atmosphere of it. And another thing, this is something that I get really upset with in video game writing, is when you'll find something like in Bioshock, for instance, or whatever other games do this storytelling technique of picking up items where people have either recorded it using audio or have written it down like a journal entry, and you're thinking, this is not something that anyone would actually record or write down, you know, like this just makes no sense that it's here. In Resident Evil, the journal entries made sense for the most part, that these were people who were researchers. They were, you know, some of them were being kept like in a quarantine like situation eventually, you know, where they were forced to keep staying at work. And I could see them writing a journal entry about that situation. So it was logical enough that it was there, and it was a nice way to tell the story outside of just cutscenes, which is what we saw for the most part in the PS1 generation. So kudos to them on that. Another, I guess my final thing that I wanted to talk about that I noticed in replaying the game is the loading scenes where you're like opening a door or going up the stairs. You mentioned that earlier. One of you mentioned it when we were talking about that initial experience with the game and the atmosphere. I still like that. I still really like the, you know, the all black screen, except for the door opening and you hear the creaking of the door as it opens, or you hear your footsteps slowly going up the stairs. And you have to wonder, well, there are going to be two zombies standing there waiting for me. Or am I going to finally get to a safe place when I open this door? Is there going to be some giant spider? You know, like it really helped build tension. And I know what they were doing was just hiding the loading. I get that.
It's a great idea, though, and it worked perfectly.
Yeah, it really was. And I mean, you still see stuff like Metroid Prime did the same thing, know, years and years later.
I didn't like that, though. It took me out of the experience.
Well, I mean, it was like they had to load it. They had a load in the next room anyway. I mean, so it's either that or like loading with blood dripping from the letters or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I get why they did it, and that makes perfect sense. I don't know. Just, I guess I'm spoiled by today's standards, because like every time it happened too common, and it kind of took me out of the overall experience.
Well, and if you, I get it, especially if you are going through an area where there's a lot of doors.
Yeah.
You know, when it's something that only happens every once in a while, it helps build tension, or it's your first time going into an area. But when you're backtracking, which you do a lot in the game, obviously, and you're going through hallways and opening a door, then another door, then another door. Yeah, I see your point of how that could take you out of the experience.
It's not even just like backtracking. It's like there's just moments, and it's like this game is notorious for it, and it's part of the things that attract people to it, but you will get lost. You will not know what is the next thing I'm supposed to do. You have to more or less go to every single room again, see if there's something that you missed, see if there's something that you picked up that will fit into some kind of, you know, spot on the wall or, you know, things like that. So that then it can become a little bit of an issue just because you're opening doors constantly while you're searching for what to do next.
Yeah, this game is a pretty bad culprit of just walk around and hopefully you'll remember something. Like I wrote this down in my notes as well, and I forgot to say it, but you just reminded me. I really wish that you could circle things on the map to remind you, like, hey, I need to come back to this room because there's a spot to put a puzzle piece or an emblem or whatever they called them. You know, like that was because it would be really hard with how big the mansion got over time.
Another as you reason unlocked to more have areas. A Wii U tablet.
Yeah, you know. I actually did, when playing Skyward Sword, I would circle areas on the map. Sometimes you could leave little marks of things you wanted to come back to, which I know that's not a Wii U game, but still, I wish I could do that in Resident Evil.
Well, I think one of the big things going back to this game, and Trey, I'm going to have you go last because I also played the PlayStation version of the game on the Vita. You know, first off, it's a pretty good experience on a smaller screen because it does hide some of the graphical defects of age.
Good point.
So it is, you know, if you are thinking about doing that, and also it's kind of cool to, you know, all right, no, it's 10:30. I could open up a book and fall asleep, or I can power on my Vita, put on my headphones and play for 30, 45 minutes and in complete darkness at night, with headphones on. And it, you know, helps with the experience. And to be honest, like if you're playing Resident Evil 1 now, it's really not that scary. There are some jump scares in it, but there's nothing that really jumps out at you. And, I will say the sound in the game is fantastic, especially yeah. the gun sounds, and like it's so satisfying taking a shotgun to a zombie and having them, you know, fall backwards. The zombie sounds, like the noises that come out of the zombie's mouth and stuff, is not very interesting or very varied. I would say it's pretty much the same sound every single time. All the zombies pretty much look the same. You know, there's some different mini bosses and things like that. But to be honest, I think the sound is probably the one thing that actually holds up. And the music, unfortunately, on the director's cut was replaced. And it's really, if you go on YouTube and you listen to the original music and then you listen to what they replace it with in the director's cut, and it does make a pretty big difference in terms of the atmosphere. It's a little bit more like a B movie in the director's cut.
Do we have any idea of why they did that for the director's cut? Was it just to say something else was different about the game, or was it a licensing issue, I wonder?
I do have the reason why. Talk for a second, Josh, and I will tell you why.
Okay. Yeah, so one thing that Kevin was just saying a second ago that I did want to expand on a little bit is the sound effect work, because I was being critical about the voice acting. And so as bad as the voice acting is, indeed the sound effects actually are satisfying. And I think a big part of that is that the whole point is immersion, and so you're not just hearing music nonstop, thankfully, especially if you're playing the director's cut version. So that you like hear the footsteps and you hear zombies sort of shambling around, and it's a great game to play with headphones on and not sitting with a huge group of young people like I was doing the first time I played it. You got it yet?
I do. This is according to the Resident Evil Wikia.com. So specifically, a new soundtrack was added to the game composed by Mamoru Samuraguchi. I'm so bad with these Japanese names.
Sounds good.
All right.
Samuraguchi, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Contrary to Masami's Ueda's use of electrical sounds to reflect the modern setting, Samuraguchi's soundtrack is intended to be more atmospherically associated with traditional horror. So I think that's why they were talking about... I think that's why I got a feeling of it just being more of like a B-movie, or, you know, traditional horror movie, you know, music that you would hear in like an 80s flick.
Yeah.
And it is. It's just like, it just makes it sound a little bit more hokey.
Yeah, you guys should definitely go, whoever's listening to this should go check out the difference in the music. It's considerable. Thank you for looking that up, Kevin.
Yeah, tell all your friends too. There is no citation for that, so I don't know how accurate that is, but if you have a website dedicated to Resident Evil, I'm sure you probably know that answer. So
CBX freak.
Yeah, unfortunately we couldn't get him on.
I wonder if he's listening to this.
I'll see. I know he's busy starting his new business. So in terms of other things, you know, in general, it's just really hard to go back to these early 3D games, whether it's on the N64 isn't too bad if you're hooked up through a FrameMeister, or if you're on like a PlayStation Vita, there's some games that looked pretty good with some up-resing, but for the most part, this was just trial and error. Like a lot of the mechanics that they're trying out in Resident Evil, like this was kind of the game they had to make this game so when they went to the sequel, they could have all these refinements, very much like Mega Man 2 compared to Mega Man 1, I think. I mean, they made some really good refinements from 1 to 2. And same thing like so many other games in the series. Look at Street Fighter to Street Fighter 2. You sometimes just have to make a game that's pretty good to make a great game afterwards, just to build off it. So, Trey.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, let me just say one more thing. And earlier I mentioned that we wouldn't have Devil May Cry if not for the Resident Evil series. And what I was specifically referring to is, for those who don't know, is that so they made RE1 and it had the tank controls and really was atmospheric and slower paced, and you had to conserve ammo as much as possible and sometimes run away from enemies. And so then I can't remember exactly who was involved at Capcom. Was Mikami one of them, or was it Kamiya? I think it was Kamiya, because he's credited as the Devil May Cry guy. So anyway, some producers at Capcom gave them this demo of what they thought was going to be Resident Evil 2, but it was way more action-paced, action-packed and fast-paced, and had a lot of like fighting and melee combat and stuff like that, instead of the slow-paced conserving ammo approach of what you see in the first Resident Evil. And they decided, why don't we just make another game that's more like the original Resident Evil, and we'll just make this other thing into a new series. And that's where Devil May Cry came from. So I'm glad that that's the approach, though, that instead they just built on that really great foundation of RE1 and made their masterpiece, which I still think is the best Resident Evil game. I know that's controversial with RE4 being out there, but I still feel like Resident Evil 2 is the best.
Overrated.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great game. It really is. But I mean, when people say it's the greatest game of all time, I don't know. Like, maybe if that's the only game you've ever played.
It's yes, no Halo.
No.
Just kidding. No,
but Ace Halo's Combat, man.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So anyway, you were about to ask Trey something before I started rambling about Devil May Cry.
Now, I will say, before people flip out, all right, I literally bought a GameCube to play Resident Evil 4. So,
it's a great game.
Yeah, and that I've never, like, if you want to talk about being scared, I've never, like, up until that point, the most scared I've been during, gameplay was that initial village scene. I was so, like, holy crap, did they do a great job with that. And it's still today. Like, man, that game's good.
Yeah.
So, Trey, you played the remake where, yes. Again, we mentioned before, they redid all the graphics, and it was just, like, a beautiful game. And I think probably till this day, I might be doing a bad job remembering, but does it still look pretty good? And what was the experience like?
Looks fantastic, actually. I've not played, for the podcast, I did not go back and play the PlayStation version. I strictly just focused on the GameCube version. To kind of familiarize myself with the changes they did make, I'm looking here at the Wikia site. Obviously, there's new graphics and new sound. I was gonna chime in when you said something about the voice acting. That's what actually prompted me to look this up. They actually re-recorded it for the remake, so it. I was thinking it didn't sound that bad, so I figured they might have re-recorded it, which they did. main changes obviously were the graphics. They added a 180 turn, so you can like turn really quick, which is obviously something that it needed. You get like a defensive weapon in the game too, which I can't imagine not having it in the PlayStation version because I relied on it a lot. But it basically lets you decapitate zombies.
What exactly was that? I've never played Remake.
It was
a knife, like machete.
It was
kind
a
of
knife.
Thing?
Yeah, it was a knife. Like basically, you can decapitate these zombies, and if you didn't, they would regenerate later in the game, and they'd be a lot faster and a lot like you die easier.
Hmm.
They added a graveyard, and I thought this was funny. It said they added a cabin in the woods. It just kind of cracked me up. basically, like, it was good. I still don't like the controls, but it holds up graphically very well. It's a very good-looking game. Compare it to, like, Resident Evil 0 and 1 on GameCube look fantastic. 2 and 3 look like pure ass. I don't know if they had a different teamwork on the remakes or if they just didn't put the effort into it.
Well, it's obvious they didn't go through the same process. And if you're going to play 2 or 3, I would go to the Dreamcast because they did do up-res version. They didn't. They had, I guess, 480. They had a VGA output support, so it looked a lot sharper, especially if you're going to hook it up to an HDTV today. Like I played through Resident Evil 2 through Dreamcast like last year. There's actually a late to the party thread on NeoGAF for it, but it looks beautiful. And like I posted screenshots from like an iPhone 4 and it still looks great.
Well, here's one thing I was reading that, and I didn't, like I said, I have to keep reiterating this. I did not play the PlayStation version, so I did not notice these things, but there were in the game on the environment, there was a bunch of picture displays, and in the GameCube version, they were shattered. in the PlayStation version, they were not. The reason they were done like this in this one is because obviously the story had progressed past Resident Evil 1 at the time of the remake's release. So they did that to tie Wesker to the game. Basically, somebody basically destroyed the pictures and like evidence that linked Wesker to Umbrella. Huh. So that was a cool little Easter egg for people that follow the Resident Evil story. But it had some additional modes. I think they added a couple different endings. I basically went through and made sure I got the best ending possible. But you know,
how did you do that? Just like not is it by not dying a lot or?
You have to do
how much ammo
things.
You saved or something?
I think you have to do like certain things in the game. You have to rescue like, let's see. I had a thing on the ending. I followed this guide basically at pivotal points that I needed to. I did a little research on it, but so there,
like
I think it was like
specific path essentially.
Yeah, I want to say there's like four or five endings, and like there's a best ending, and then there's like a worst ending, and then there's some in between. And like the endings kind of dictate who survives and you know what happens to the mansion and stuff like that. So. Sure. I enjoyed the game. I kind of want to go back and get the PlayStation version and play it on Vita, but at the same time, like I have, you know, the GameCube version holds up so well. It's such a good game. Like, and I enjoyed, you know, laying back in bed just playing it on the GameCube.
Yeah, man, I think it's the best one. It's the best version of the game to go back to if you have a Wii or a GameCube. That's probably the way to go about doing it. And you know, again, if you know, you're listening to this and you haven't played the Resident Evil games, like, again, some of these quotes that are just not even, it's just short of ridiculous. And you got to think some of these quotes just kind of got lost in the translation process and the localization, which, you know, again, even today, there's some problems with that when you don't have a good localization company like Atlus or 8.4 or like Treehouse at Nintendo. Here's some good quotes I want you to just keep in mind. This is from the beginning of the game. When you're playing as Jill, Barry has some, you know, cool stuff for you and some advice. Jill, here's a lockpick. It might come in handy if you, the master of unlocking, take it with you. Also, during a pivotal scene, that was close. You're almost a Jill sandwich. And then again, this is literally like moments into the game when the characters are together where Barry goes, "What is this?" Jill says, "What is it?" Barry says, "Blood. Jill. See if you," and like these pauses are literally like how long they pause. "Jill. See if you can find any more clues. I'll be examining this. I hope it's not Chris's blood."
Sorry, I ruined your reading there by trying to interrupt. In a screenplay, I write screen. I'm a screenwriter. So often people will put beat in parentheses, like in the script for what you're talking about. And some of these beats, they would technically have to be like beat times three.
Yep.
There's the it's like a second and a half.
It's like
long
it's literally
stuff.
Like searching for the next line, like the next. It's like a whole separate track on the disc, and it just kind of. It goes on like, oh, there's some great quotes from Wesker. And again, it's like one of those things where you have these characters that bump into each other throughout the game and just have these incredibly awkward interactions, which, you know, would probably be even just better to not have any voice acting at all. But like I was mentioning before, you know, trying to give you a cinematic experience in a video game was one of those things that, you know, people were really trying hard to do. That's why we had all those FMV games on the 3DO and the Sega CD and the Sega Saturn and the PlayStation 1, because this door was open and people just did a really bad job walking through it. They just didn't know how to walk after they got through. So it is one of those things that, you know, maybe again, I didn't play the remake. Hopefully those re-recordings were a little bit better, but it's just one of those things that people always make fun of because of like how absolutely ridiculously bad it is to the point where, it is constantly mocked.
All right. True.
So, you know, in wrapping up, I got about 3/4 of the way through and, then eventually got stuck and said, I am hating this game right now. And it's no fun. And I stopped playing, but, you know, again, the thing that it made me realize is how much I love Resident Evil 2. and how much that is a game that's more made for me, that's more interested in action, because it's a lot more action. And I just thought it looks way better. And I will play Resident Evil 2 any day of the week. And even there's real, like, Resident Evil 3 is incredibly interesting. Code Veronica on the Dreamcast was something that I bought the day it came out. But again, sometimes if you just kind of lose steam with these games, they're really hard to, you know, really push through.
Yeah, or if you take like a week and a half before you come back to it, it's even then it's like, what was I even doing?
Yeah, and it you have to have, if you're going to play the PS1 version, you really have to have a history with the game. Otherwise, it's not going to hold up. You're not going to have nostalgic value for it, and it's going to be even worse off. All right, what we're going to do is take a quick break. We're going to be right back with some awesome news. We got some really a cool story from Trey about GameStop and a victory from GameStop.
I don't know if I call it cool, but...
No, I think it was cool.
The conclusion is cool.
We're going to talk about how I bought another Wii U. And also, we're 2 weeks out from the PlayStation 4. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that as well, including maybe some cool stuff about our next episode. So stick around. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Kevin. So due to some circumstances, I wasn't able to put in this last segment. So that's going to be it for this week's show. But we are going to be back next time with The Legend of Zelda, Link to the Past. So enjoy this music at the end. And I'm hoping to pick up an extra guest to give a different perspective, someone that really was ready for this game at the time, that was a little bit older. So hopefully we'll have a special guest for next week. So keep an eye out on twitter.com/KevinLarrabee and also backinmyplay.com. I will give a brief note that I did pick up a Wii U in that new Super Mario Brothers bundle, and man, that game is fantastic. That game is very underrated, and I will hopefully be talking about that a little bit more next time, but I definitely recommend, don't listen to, everyone saying it's just another new Super Mario Brothers game. It is very good. So thanks as always for listening. So stick around. This is some awesome music. And then we will see you next week for The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past. We'll be right back.